fifth case for argument today is Copeland against Penske Logistics. Mr. Kendall.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, opposing counsel. This is an appeal from a decision involving a union, a company, and a group of employees. The plaintiffs filed a lawsuit against the company and the union, alleging that they breached the contract by ignoring grievances on subcontracting clauses and ignoring grievances on duty on the severance package negotiations.
Yeah, there is a problem which the parties don't discuss, which is to say that when the allegation is that the parties didn't negotiate for severance packages or the union didn't negotiate harder for a severance package, it doesn't sound like an argument that the actual collective bargaining agreement was violated. Neither side's briefs say that the actual collective bargaining agreement has a severance clause that wasn't enforced. The argument seems to be that the union didn't negotiate harder to get such a benefit. And that raises, in my mind at least, a question of subject matter jurisdiction. An argument that union and employer did not engage in good faith bargaining over future contract terms is an argument that somebody committed an unfair labor practice. And that's within the exclusive jurisdiction of the National Labor Relations Board. So that is the basis of my question. How did the district court have subject matter jurisdiction in this case? Why isn't this within the NLRB's exclusive jurisdiction?
Well, if I understand the question correctly, Your Honor, the collective bargaining agreement in Section 26 has a provision that says that if any of the operations of the company are going to be changed substantially and it will adversely affect the workforce, then the company and the union will meet and discuss.
Yes, exactly.
And grieve.
Yes, and it's that kind of claim, a claim that one did not negotiate in good faith, that states an unfair labor practice. And that's the basis of my question. Right? The Supreme Court has held that you can't use Section 301 to litigate an unfair labor practice claim. That's completely within the board's province. And the general counsel of the board has unreviewable discretion to issue or not issue an unfair labor practice complaint. Did you take this to the general counsel? Did you file a charge of unfair labor practice?
No, they did not.
But we wouldn't even get to the general counsel's discretion to file it or not file it.
No. They did hire a law firm in Indianapolis, Dan Picard, and that law firm contacted both the company and the union directly and raised the issue that this was a breach of the collective bargaining agreement and a breach of their third-party beneficiary rights under the logistics agreement.
Another way of asking this, Mr. Kendall, is can you identify the provision in the collective bargaining agreement itself that you believe was violated, an express provision?
Yes. The collective bargaining agreement in Section 10 prohibits subcontracting.
But that's...
Those
were those older pre-termination grievances, though, right?
But that's part of the lawsuit. The lawsuit alleges that the company breached the contract by not honoring those grievances and subcontracting work out. And in paragraph 34 of our complaint, paragraph G and J, and the complaint also alleges that the company and the union breached their duties under Section 26 to meet and grieve that process. I think that gets us to the issue of duty of fair representation, but maybe not.
Do you have some case for the proposition that you can litigate failure to negotiate in good faith in federal court under Section 301 just because Collective Bargaining Agreement A says that when it expires, we'll negotiate on another one?
I don't think it's just that they didn't. No, I don't. But I don't think that they didn't just negotiate in good faith. I don't think they followed the procedure laid out in the contract for what to do if there was a change in the operations, and that is they didn't grieve it and take it through the process and follow the grievance procedure, and that the decision of the union not to arbitrate was arbitrary. It was, as the court says in Neal and Venkel and Raziak, that it was not a reasoned decision. They simply asserted, much as we're accused of doing in our brief, a conclusion that it was insufficient. But they, in fact, had another grievance that they did pursue about vacation pay, but that is not what's at stake here. What's at stake here, as I understand it, Your Honor, and I mean humbly, is that they were the third-party beneficiaries of this logistic agreement, which specifically referred to their personnel and recognized the union's statutory duty to negotiate on behalf of them in an effects bargaining, and then provided automatic funding to pay for anything that the union agreed to, and the company agreed to, and gave Penske the authority to trump the star on the amount in Section 12.2. I don't see it as just a breach of contract. It's a failure to grieve and to honor it under, I'm lost for the name of the case. I think it's,
I still think, counsel, that you're not understanding the gist of my question. If there were a clause in the collective bargaining agreement requiring particular severance benefits, and the employer didn't pay them, and the union neglected to enforce them, one could use Section 301, and then in order to prevail, you'd have to show both that the employer substantively violated the contract and that the union violated its duty of fair representation in leaving its members in the lurch. But the gist of this claim seems to be that the union didn't bargain harder for severance benefits that weren't in the collective bargaining agreement, but which the members of the union hoped could be got. And that sure sounds to me like a claim of an unfair labor practice.
If that is part of it, Your Honor, and if it has been, if that is correct, the second part of it is that the union failed to act on those grievances, not the collective bargaining. They failed to process those grievances. There were three grievances filed by Houchin that specifically referenced both the subcontracting in Section 10 and the severance package. And he filed them through April. And that...
I think you can turn an unfair labor practice into a hybrid Section 301 suit by having an employee complain to the union. The thing being complained about is still an unfair labor practice. This is a pretty basic principle of labor law, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. My time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Kendall. Mr. Garrison. Well, Mr. Garrison, your brief doesn't discuss subject matter jurisdiction either.
No, it does not.
What do you think about it?
We read Mr. Kendall's complaint as one that claimed a violation of the labor contract through the violation of the logistics agreement. However much we disagree with that, we understood that to be the basis of his Section 301 claim. We believe, obviously, the logistics agreement between Penske and the Star does not provide the basis for a Section 301 claim. But we went on to...
There isn't any clause in any of these agreements for severance benefits. The logistics agreement says that if Penske pays severance benefits, they will get reimbursed. That doesn't require severance benefits. Right? That's why I began by saying this looks like a claim that the union didn't bargain hard enough with the employer for severance benefits.
Correct, Your Honor. And as we noted in our brief, the employees never filed an unfair labor practice charge over those allegations.
But that's what got me to ask the question about subject matter jurisdiction. Subject matter jurisdiction is the first issue in every federal case. It's not something that's optional.
Yes, I understand, Your Honor. We did not address that in a briefing before the district court or in briefing before this court, solely because I, as I explained, we understood the complaint to be one that claimed a violation of the logistics agreement as the basis for the...
It's inconceivable, right? It's frivolous to say there was a violation of the logistics agreement. The violation of the logistics agreement logistics agreement says that if Penske pays severance benefits, the newspaper will reimburse them. It's not possible to violate that when no severance benefits are paid, right? So a claim of a violation of that contract is just gibberish. And, of course, there's a separate rule that gibberish doesn't create federal jurisdiction.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. We believe that the Section 301 claim fails for the exact reason you mentioned, because there is no conceivable language under either the labor contract or the logistics agreement that created the right that the plaintiffs sought to enforce here in the district court. And the district court correctly found that the permissive language under the STAR contract did not create any obligation on Penske or create any right in favor of those employees that they could enforce then in federal court. The district court also properly found that these issues were never presented or exhausted through the grievance procedure under the labor contract. Employees argue that they did present three grievances to Penske, but none of those grievances addressed the issues that were then addressed in the employee's complaint. And as for Mr. Kendall's contention about subcontracting, the extent of the mention of subcontracting in the employee's complaint is simply a citation of the section of the agreement that discusses subcontracting. There is no substantive allegation in the complaint that Penske violated the labor contract by its actions in subcontracting. And the threefold decision of the district court should be affirmed for the final reason, because the employees could not show that the union's refusal to process those grievances to arbitration was done arbitrarily, discriminatorily, or in bad faith. There was absolutely no evidence of any of those factors in this case, and the district court properly found that for those reasons, the Section 301 claim could not survive.
Have I got the history of this straight, Mr. Garrison, that the plaintiffs here and the local they were a part of had been working for the STAR for a long time, and then the STAR decided to outsource the delivery operation? Is that right?
No, that's incorrect, Judge Hamilton. Actually, what happened was I take that back. That may be the case. I don't think the record completely reflects the background prior to the beginning of the labor contract.
These plaintiffs were employees of the STAR for a long time, right?
Before
the 2006 outsourcing to Penske?
I believe they were, yes.
Okay. So the STAR outsourced and then decides to cut costs 3 years later by moving the contract to somebody else. Is that the idea?
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
I see my time is up, Your Honor, so if, unless there are any other questions, we respectfully ask that the court affirm the judgment of the district court and deny the employee's appeal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Garrison. Anything further, Mr. Kendall?
If I want to make sure, the only thing I would like to say is I'd like to make sure that it's not simply cumbersomeness on the part of counsel in explaining this. And I understand what the court's asking about the Section 301 issue, I think. We would argue respectfully that Section 12.2 does actually make these people third-party beneficiaries, even under Indiana law.
Well, even if so, what did Penske breach in the logistics agreement? What did they fail to do?
Because their duty arises under federal law to bargain about the effects, and.
But what did they do to breach the logistics agreement?
They breached the logistics agreement by refusing to bargain or process agreements about severance. The recognition that they have a duty under federal law. The difference between OAC and some of these...
digging your jurisdictional grave, the more you talk about duty to bargain existing independently under federal law, the more you show that there's no subject matter jurisdiction here, because that duty can be enforced only by the National Labor Relations Board.
Then I would cite Section 26 of the contract, which creates a contractual duty to bargain the effects of a major operational change, and it's in sync with the logistics agreement, which acknowledges that duty by saying that if you come in and negotiate that or you reach an agreement on this, we'll bail you out. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Kendall, Mr. Garrison, the court invites both parties to file supplemental memoranda within 14 days addressing the question whether there is subject matter jurisdiction in this case.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, the case will be taken under advisement when those memoranda have been received.